Hey there, this is Justin with Beyond the Uniform. This week I'm speaking with Brad Bonney, who is at Airbnb as a manager in their trust and safety department. Brad was at the Naval Academy. After that, went to Stanford, where he received his master's in electrical engineering, served on submarines, got out and got another master's degree at Stanford as at their Graduate School of Business, and then went to Airbnb afterwards. I think it's a great interview for those of you who are thinking of business school. He does a great analysis of how to think about going to grad school. Also the comparison with the master's he did in electrical engineering. It's also a great talk about how to get your foot in the door. If you're thinking about joining a startup, if you're thinking about joining a high growth startup, he was part of Airbnb through a triple their in their size and revenue growth. And also anyone thinking about technology or anything in that space, really well thought out. As always, the show notes are on beyondtheuniform.io. If you want to skip around, I've put down the different time markers based on which topic he's speaking about, if you have something in particular you're interested in. Also this week, trying something new. In addition to the audio version on podcast, this one I did by video, and so the video is online as well if you're a little bit more visually oriented. A couple of notes, we did record this at Airbnb, so there is some background noise. You can see in the video there's a lot of activity going on. Also, it's my first attempt at a video interview, and so for part of the video, using a second camera, there's some audio-video sync issues. It feels a little bit like a kung fu movie, so appreciate your patience in getting this sorted out. Would love to hear your feedback. If you do watch the video, if that's a format that's more appealing, we'll invest more in that. So here's Brad Bonney, and hope you enjoy the interview. Cool. Well, thank you for meeting with me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
It's good to meet you in person. So I guess just starting with just the basic context of the quick summary of where you grew up, you know, what your life was like at the Naval Academy, the Stanford experience, and then the military experience all before you got out.
Great. So I grew up in Kansas City, lived there my whole life, and then in eighth grade decided, hey, I want to go to the Naval Academy.
It's pretty early.
It is. Yeah. Told my parents, they laughed and thought it was just another fad, and it's the one that stuck.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate enough to go to the Naval Academy, graduated in 2005.
Did you know anyone, or like what was the shift to apply?
So my eighth grade science teacher was previously in the Navy, P3 pilot, came back, talked about it in between earth science classes, and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And then realized I couldn't fly because I have no depth perception, and so still decided to carry out the Navy piece.
Nice, nice. And at the Naval Academy, electrical engineering?
Electrical engineering. Yeah. And Trident Scholar.
Okay.
So I was able to do some independent research with the electrical engineering department, biometric research, both there and with in collaboration with the NSA, which was really cool.
Nice. Nice. I was just struggling to get by as a EE major. You were at the opposite extreme.
Yeah.
And then you went straight from the Naval Academy to Stanford.
I did. So I had the opportunity to go to Stanford Graduate School right after I graduated, got a master's in electrical engineering there, before then going back to sort of the real Navy, nuclear power school, and submarines eventually.
That must have been a transition to go from Stanford back into the Navy.
To go from the Navy or Naval Academy to Stanford was a transition in its own right.
I bet.
And then to go back was difficult as well.
Man. And then straight from Stanford to the Nuke Pipeline for subs.
Nuke Pipeline, and ended up on a fast attack out of San Diego.
Okay. And that was the Jefferson?
Jefferson City.
Nice.
759.
And at what point did you decide or realize you wanted to get out of the Navy?
Pretty late, actually. I had actually talked to the detailers about potentially signing a contract and looking at extending beyond the JO tour.
Yep.
And sort of at that 12-month mark, right, when you could drop a letter, it had started to think about what I wanted the future to hold. A few things changed in my life. I got married the year before. The idea of going back out on deployment sort of was less attractive. And so I started looking at other options, and that's when I thought about business school and made the decision to get out of the Navy.
And when you got out, did you do reserves, or how did you approach that decision?
So I started doing reserves. My intention was to do reserves. Yep. And I spent about 3 months drilling.
Okay.
And during that time, you're sort of shopping for a billet, is the way that it works. And I was not very familiar with the process. And
yeah.
And frankly, didn't want to spend the time trying to find a billet, both in the geography and in the I don't even remember what it's called now, sort of the aux code that that was available. And so at that point, I pulled back.
Yeah. And what went into your decision? Because you were in a unique spot where you had a graduate degree in the Navy. Mm-hmm. How did you evaluate, you know, getting another one versus going straight into some sort of industry?
Yeah, I think, frankly, if I'm honest with myself and look back, I think part of it is because I don't think that I had the confidence in myself to pitch myself to go straight into industry.
Yeah.
Which, looking back and having now worked on the civilian side in a growing company, is completely absurd.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was a very real fear for me. And so it was, you know, how do I tell a company that the electrical engineering degree that I got 5 years ago is really no longer valid, right? And how do I convince them that it's still a worthwhile skill? How do I convince them that being a weapons officer on a nuclear-powered submarine is transferable to their world was daunting. And I think, unfortunately, incorrectly so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you think through, so if you're thinking, I want to reset or I want to rebrand myself, how did you decide business school versus some other grad program? Mm-hmm. And how did you choose Stanford?
So business school over another grad program, because I already had the master's in electrical engineering, which is a pretty specific or focused degree, I was looking to sort of diversify my resume. Mm-hmm. And I think business school is a great way to do that. It also is a great way to spend 2 years evaluating like what companies actually have to offer or what it means to be in business development or corporate strategy or marketing, and just get exposure to those concepts or ideas. I don't think it's required to learn those areas, but it is a good way to survey the landscape.
Yeah. I remember I had my first couple months at Stanford, I literally had lunch with someone and was like, you did banking. Like, I thought they were like tellers at a bank. You know, I knew nothing about the financial services world or anything like that. So it was definitely a good way to get exposure to just the terminology and what the options were out there.
It was. And I think why Stanford, one, they accepted me,
which is a good thing,
which helped make the decision easy. I honestly only applied to Harvard and Stanford in the first round, and business schools sort of have a multi-round system. Mm-hmm. And I was very much interested in, if I'm going to outlay this money, because not all of it was covered by GI Bill or Yellow Ribbon Program, I only want to do that in the highest leverage way. What's going to potentially give me the biggest return on my investment? And I think everybody needs to be aware of what they're buying when they go to business school. I think anyone that gets into a business school is smart enough to learn the concepts in business school without school.
Yeah.
And so what you're buying is the network, the relationships. You are buying a way of thinking as well. Each school sort of approaches problems differently and molds you in those different ways. But in many ways, you're buying the relationships. And so I looked at top tier, sort of the top five schools, and applied to Harvard and Stanford in the first round and was fortunate enough to get into Stanford.
Oh, nice. And what advice would you have for someone considering applying to business school or to Stanford specifically? What advice would you have on that application process?
So the advice that I tell everybody, so Stanford and I think others as well, Stanford's hallmark question is what matters most to you and why. And I wrote that essay, and I had my wife read it. And she laughed and returned it to me and said, if this is really what matters most to you and why, Stanford will not accept you. And it's because I didn't actually take time to think about what mattered to me and to be honest in my reflection. I actually wrote what I thought they would want to hear. And so I think my my best advice is to bring your genuine self to the table because they're receiving thousands and thousands of applications. And what they're looking for are unique individuals. And if you write what you think they want to hear, you'll likely be wrong. And what they want is to get to know the applicant and to fill a highly diverse and unique student body. So presenting yourself in that way, I think, will be helpful.
I totally agree. I remember my brother was helping me, just kind of doing what your wife is doing, looking at all my essays. And I remember when I got to Stanford and he looked at that first question, he's like, you are completely on your own here. And I felt like of all the schools I applied to, like Stanford was the most me. Like there was the most me in that yes. application. And I think everything else was a little bit more polished or kind of gaming it. And I completely agree with that.
I actually think that's one of the contributing factors that probably led to me not being accepted to HBS because I think I tried to fit myself more into what I thought the HBS interview or recruiter application process was looking for.
Yeah.
And it probably came across as less genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else come to mind for advice?
Talk to alums.
Yeah.
If you're interested in GSB, talk to GSBers. If you're interested in HBS, talk to folks who are there or have been there. Every school has its own unique approaches and own culture, and that culture, I think, can make or break your experience.
Totally agree. I did something similar where I would email whatever the veterans club was of each school,
they're
and they were good
resource.
Putting me in touch with a submarine person, and that, you know, I don't think I would have gotten in had they not tweaked my thinking on the application process.
Yeah, the veterans clubs are great resources. There's collaboration between veterans clubs with across business schools as well.
Yep.
It's a really great network, both within the business school, but also beyond business school, I think.
Yep.
As I think through the various networks, I'm actually not sure which one has been more helpful, the veterans network or community as a whole or GSB.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And if someone was on active duty right now or even at the academy and thinking of that they wanted to go to business school one day, is there anything you can think of that would help them prepare or anything to do differently in their career to kind of make maybe a positive difference in getting accepted?
I don't know necessarily about the positive difference in getting accepted. I think where I would challenge people is to think about, do you want to commit 2 years of your life to a full-time program or do you want to get a business degree, learn how to think from learn the thinking behind that comes along with an MBA? And is an evening or executive style program going to meet your needs?
Yep.
My roommate from the Naval Academy just graduated from the executive program at UCLA while he was stationed in Huntington Beach.
Oh, nice.
And it's been a great way for him to end his shore tour. He's now separating. But he now leaves the Navy with his MBA ready to make that direct switch. And that 2 year opportunity cost is waived.
Yep.
And so it took a little bit more effort doing nights and weekend classes, while he was on shore duty. But I think that's a great opportunity. And there are some phenomenal executive MBA programs that are out there that should also be considered.
How would you How would you advise someone to think about that distinction of choose? Because I'm sure there's trade-offs on both sides, but what's your thought on either the type of person might do better or kind of the pros and cons on each way?
I think it comes back to understanding what you're buying and being comfortable with that.
Yep.
So, for example, my Naval Academy roommate is interested in staying in Southern California, post-military, and in that area, the UCLA business degree comes with a massive UCLA network.
Sure. Yep.
And so if you're looking to stay in a geography and buy your way into a network within that geography, it's a great option.
Yep.
Great opportunity.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Airbnb, just for the 0.1% of the United States that doesn't know what Airbnb is, what's your rundown on your company now?
I wish it was 0.1%. That would mean we're doing something right. Airbnb is an online platform that allows hosts, homeowners, or renters to open up their home to a guest, either a room or their entire place, to let somebody from around the world come and live in their home for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying, I think that you said there's about 3,000 employees worldwide now?
There are, just under.
When you joined, what employee number were you?
So my employee number, I don't know. We were just under 1,000 people globally. So,
wow.
Yeah, we were approaching that 1,000 number pretty rapidly.
So you've been here to see a company triple in size, which is pretty rare.
Triple in size from an employee base over the last 2 years, two years and 2 months. But we've 4X'd in terms of business size, maybe 5X'd now in terms of business size. Mm. So it's been an incredible experience, both from a growth perspective, from the people,
yep.
seeing the culture change as it does when you grow that much, starting to think about economies of scale.
Yep.
How do we not grow? How do we not double as a company when the business doubles? Those sorts of things.
Wow, it's so few companies I can think of, even in San Francisco, that go through that, and to have that front row seat for that explosive growth is pretty incredible.
It's been a great opportunity.
And I guess from the perspective of someone who's still in the military, how would you explain what you do on a day-to-day basis and what your life looks like at Airbnb?
So I work on a team that we refer to as trust and safety. And what that really means is that we're thinking about sort of two aspects of the trip. There's the preventative sort of before the trip happens.
Yep.
And how do we think about risk mitigation? This is about looking for risky signals or anything that could cause us to be concerned about fraud or abuse or scams, and try to prevent it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the crisis response side, because the risk mitigation is never perfect, people will have issues, and how do we respond to those issues and help them reach meaningful resolution.
Mm.
And so that's what our global team does. There are now about 200 internal folks who are working on trust and safety. Me specifically, I focus on a lot of the strategy and planning aspects and a lot of our support functions.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking through how do we train 200 people around the world to do risk mitigation or respond within our policies? How do we quality control those? What sort of project management is required to improve operational efficiency? Come in on time, under budget, types of things. So I'm thinking about company growth and future forecasting, budget control, P&L responsibility.
And the team is 200 people. In your office here, how many people do you interact with on a daily basis as part of your immediate team?
So our team here in San Francisco is only about 12 people.
Yep.
Our global team is spread out. This is our smallest office. We have folks in Portland, in Dublin, in Singapore that make up our global response team.
Yep.
We also have some folks who are in remote offices, both in the U.S., Brazil, Korea, Japan.
That's awesome.
Which is great as well.
Does that mean you end up traveling quite a bit?
I do travel quite a bit. Yeah, this year especially, as I've been also responsible for thinking through how we enter new markets like China and India.
Yeah.
And are there special considerations we need to take from a trust building perspective or a risk mitigation perspective?
What's travel look like? Are you gone for like weeks at a time? Are you gone for a couple of days? And I guess in the last 6 months, how much do you think you've traveled?
So the last 6 months hopefully is not representative of what it what it usually is. This year to date, I've clocked about 90,000 miles.
Wow.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Between January and August 1st. I think that's how much travel I did all last year.
Okay.
So, and that's, you know, I'm really tapering off now. So probably around around that. I try to get to each of our regional offices twice a year.
Okay.
So Singapore, Portland, and Dublin, I try to go to twice a year.
Yep.
I have direct reports that are in those offices, and they have teams of their own who are also in those offices. And so to be able to understand what pains they're feeling on the ground, I need to connect with them directly.
I bet. And what about like the hours that you work here, and like what's that like on a day-to-day basis?
So I usually get in now around 8:30. Most of the company, I think, probably starts somewhere between 8:30 and 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably leave around 6:30 to 7 on average most days.
Do you end up working when you get home or on the weekends, or how often does that come up?
I almost never work on weekends anymore. When I first started, the team was growing so fast that there was a necessity to work on weekends.
Sure.
We just didn't have enough coverage.
Yeah.
We've been fortunate to build a really robust team, and so I actually don't worry about the weekends anymore.
That's great.
Because we have people who are on call and making things happen. The only evening calls that I take now deal with China and India specifically from a time zone difference. India being 12 and a half hours out of sync.
Yeah.
Actually, later tonight, I have a call with India from 7 to 8.
Yeah. My early days with Storybox, I was outsourcing to India. And so it was a super early morning or late night call.
Always.
Yeah.
Exactly. But those are only once or twice a week at most.
Okay. That's not bad.
No.
And I love the tour of the office coming in here, and you were showing me some of the perks. But what are some of the perks that you enjoy working at Airbnb or just kind of a high-growth internet startup in general?
Yeah, there are quite a few. I think just from a day-to-day consumption perspective, breakfast, lunch, and dinner are served here. We have an incredible food program. We have, you know, organic or locally sourced food. We have multiple options of food every day. Breakfast, I'm going to get the times wrong. Breakfast from 8 to 10, lunch from noon to 2, dinner from 6 to 8.
Wow.
Come and go as you please. We have some great medical benefits. It's full medical coverage. There's actually zero contribution for me.
Mm.
And then my wife would be, a pretty marginal contribution if she didn't have it through her own work.
Yep.
So great medical and dental benefits. We don't have children, but for family leave, we have both maternity and paternity leave grouped together.
Oh, nice.
And so there is no separation or differentiation between maternity leave and paternity leave.
Nice.
So women get standard disability, which is state governed, but then there's an additional family leave that both women and men get. I can't remember the length of time, but it's significant. It's great. You can use that at sort of a variable time throughout the calendar year after your child's born, which provides a lot of flexibility.
That's so great to see more companies doing that. It seems like it makes a big difference on the father, son or daughter connection in that really early stage.
It really does. I think it's something like 10 weeks of paternity or family leave taken over the first year, and then they just introduced what they're calling reintroduction time. So after your 10 weeks of leave, for the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you can work from home one day a week can sort of reintegrate into...
Oh, that's smart. Rather than going smack dab right back into the mix of things.
Exactly. And that's for both men and women.
That's great.
So it's a great alternative way to think about, like, what does the person need? Not just giving free time or giving things away, but really how do we marry sort of the needs of the company? We need this person working again with the needs of the worker who wants to or needs to spend more time with their child.
And what's vacation look like?
Now you're testing me on all the benefits.
It's just generic, but yeah.
It's 15 days of paid vacation a year for the first 5 years, and then it goes up to 20 days after that.
Nice.
We have 9 or 10 holidays on top of that, and then for the last couple of years, we've had time off at the end of the year where we've had a business closure sort of between the Christmas and New Year holidays, which has been really great.
That's nice. And
the company really encourages us to travel during that time. So I think one of the perks that we get is an Airbnb travel credit every quarter. And that travel credit, the company wants us to use.
So that's great.
The notion is almost a use or lose type mentality of here's some credit, go use our product. We believe in the product.
Yep.
So let's use it. The end of year break is a great time to take advantage of that.
That's great, man. It definitely reduces the cost of traveling for fun.
For sure.
And when you were at the GSB, how did you, if we have time, we'll get into your internships in a little bit, but how did you end up deciding to come to Airbnb, and what was that interview process like?
Yeah, so it started with really taking the time to think about what industries I was interested in. So I sort of did an industry search first. Mm-hmm. And the concept of collaborative consumption, which is now often referred to as sharing economy, sort of the notion of utilizing underutilized resources, or how do you monetize underutilized resources, was really fascinating to me just from an economic perspective. Mm-hmm. The business model really made sense.
Yeah.
And so I started talking to companies in that space. Mm. So you can think of Postmates or Lyft or TaskRabbit or Airbnb, just to understand how they were thinking about the industry itself.
Yeah.
At that point, I used I just used the company website and found a job that was on the company website that, as I read the description, I'm like, that is exactly what I want to do.
What was it about it that was appealing?
So it was a combination of people management, owning strategy for a department, and being in sort of this risk space.
Yeah.
And sort of putting all of that together seemed like a great initial initial transition for me from military to civilian world. You have to remember, at this point, I was still not fully confident in my ability to pitch myself to another company. And so sort of latching on to that risk mitigation piece and crisis response and trust and safety.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I had the easy sell transitioning from the military.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to a GSB alum who was working at Airbnb and said, I'm really interested in this one particular job. Is there someone you can put me in touch with that I can talk to?
Yep.
And she said, send me your resume. And I did. And she just forwarded it straight to the hiring manager, who reached out and said, I like your resume. Let's have a call.
Oh, wow.
And that sort of kicked off the interview process.
And for someone in the military on active duty who's never gone through that civilian interview process, what was like the basic structure? How many days was it? What was the types of things you were asked?
So our interview process has changed significantly since I interviewed. I had 17 interviews. We used to be a very heavy interview-heavy company.
What, one day?
No, that was across 3 different days.
Okay, geez, that's still a marathon session.
They were. Yeah. We've sort of changed the process now to two days, roughly, no more than 8 interviews.
Okay.
And the way that we like to structure it is sort of the first set of interviews tend to be folks within the department that you are going to be mm-hmm. working with. If they want to move you forward, there may be a project, some sort of work skills test.
Okay.
And then...
Did you complete that in the interview, or was it like a take-home?
Mine was take-home.
Okay. Yep.
For our technical roles, they're on-site.
Okay.
But mine was a take-home. Mm. And then come back for cross-functional interviews.
Okay. How did you prepare for this sort of interview?
So I read everything I could find on Airbnb. I felt like I was more prepared for the interview.
Yeah.
I knew more about Airbnb then than maybe I know now in terms of like the
I'm sure.
the breadth of the company. Because I was interviewing for a strategy role within trust and safety, I read through the entire every policy that they had. There's a property damage guarantee policy that Airbnb had at the time, and I read the entire thing. I knew what was excluded. I knew what was included, so that I could talk about it, and so that I could form opinions about where I would take the program if I was in charge of it.
Okay.
So that I could sort of anticipate, or I tried to anticipate, what operation strategy questions they might ask me.
Okay, nice. How did you, so you kind of talked about choosing an industry. How did you choose the size of company you were going to go with? I'm not sure at the time of less than 1,000 employees if you'd still consider it like a earlier stage startup or a later stage startup, but how did you choose established company versus, you know, super early stage?
So my my summer before graduating from business school, I interned at 2 different companies. I interned at Goldman Sachs in an established financial services role. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 6 weeks interning with a company of 4 or 5 people, super early stage startup. They've since done well and were acquired by Amazon, and I'm super happy for them. I had nothing to do with it. and really sort of seeing how early stage that was, for me, I was very much indexing on how can I find a place that I can continue to learn and grow.
Yeah.
And I think some of this goes back to, again, where I was mentally in terms of my confidence to deliver value on day one.
Yeah.
And how much I thought I could deliver on my own versus how much I still was in the almost like the military mindset of we're going to teach you how to do this first and then let you go do it better. And so I was looking, sort of coming out of that experience, was looking for a company that was growing. Growth and growth trajectory was certainly a consideration of mine.
Yeah.
But one that was a little farther along the trajectory, somewhat de-riskified, somewhat slightly more mature, where I felt like I could learn and grow from the person who would be my boss.
Yeah. How much has that relationship changed? Have you been reporting to the same person consistently since you've been here, or has that switched around?
So my boss quit my 5th week on the job, which was difficult to take. It also provided a great opportunity in that I stepped into a lot of his responsibilities.
Yeah.
And that was a great opportunity for me to prove both to the company, but also more so to myself, that I could do a lot of the role.
Yeah.
And so for the next 8 months, I was one of the, you know, interim leads of the department, and was able to go out and help hire my boss. I was on the search team and interview team to hire my boss.
Yep.
And he started a little over a year ago.
And I guess comparing to that to your relationship to your department head or XO or CO, how is that relationship compared to the more traditional relationships in the Navy?
So I think I probably have a more personal relationship with my boss today than I did when I was in the military.
Yeah.
My current boss cares deeply about not only the work I do, but how I do it, how I am doing in terms of well-being and wellness, on top of just my ability to deliver.
Yeah.
He's an incredibly seasoned leader, and so he's been able to push me in areas where I've said, I want to get better here. And so he's found opportunities for me to say, great, you can own this. And through that experience, I've been able to grow. So really, really happy with how things ended up. And I'm actually getting what I initially was seeking, a manager that I felt like I could grow and develop and learn from.
It's interesting because I feel like I've struggled with my relationship to employees or to like board members. I think it gets ingrained at the Naval Academy and in the Navy, this thought of fraternization. And I think for good reason, kind of keeping people at arm's length. And it, and that line gets completely removed in the civilian sector where it doesn't really matter as much. And in many ways, you want to have a more intimate and more personal relationship with the people you're leading or who are leading you. And I found that transition really difficult.
Yeah, the dynamic there... It's difficult not just from a transition perspective, but also how you operationalize that.
Yeah.
Because how can you figuring out how to toe the line between cordial joking around environment to wait, I am the boss and I need you to do X, Y, or Z.
Yep.
And being able to navigate between both of them.
Yeah.
What I've found is that because everyone's in that situation, people don't care.
Yeah.
Right? Like they know you're the boss, and so when you ask them to do something, they're gonna do it and deliver. And when you're not asking them to do something, you're just another person.
Yep.
And so I've found that the only people that think about it and or care about it are the military folks, and it doesn't matter. Everyone else doesn't think about it in that same way.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Just to be respectful of time, a couple just more random questions. So if you were talking to someone who's currently at a military academy and they're thinking of getting out at the end of their 5 or 7 years, what advice would you give to them in thinking or planning ahead for that transition? It could be financially, it could be whatever.
You know, I think that if you're thinking about getting out in 5 years before the commitment's even started, you may be overthinking it. Right? I think the opportunities that I've had have come about in many ways because I wasn't planning for it.
Yeah.
But rather, I worked to excel in whatever role I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trying to navigate it in such a way that would position me for the next big thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I continue to operate, for better or worse. Mm. And something that I would definitely encourage people to consider.
Yeah, no, that resonates with me. I feel like we're our ability to influence the future is so limited, and the extent to which I've been able to like just really be present for whatever job I'm working on and just focus on learning and extracting the most value from that, that's been so much more beneficial. And what I end up doing is something I didn't even know about at the time. So there's
exactly.
No way to really navigate in advance. What about someone who was currently on active duty and thinking out of getting out in the next year or maybe 18 months? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I did was a process that at the GSB they talk about, like career life visioning, which is to sort of work backwards from your desired end state.
Yeah.
Right? And actually go through the exercise of close your eyes and imagine yourself sort of at the end. And whatever the end means to you.
Yep.
Right? Maybe that's I'm 40 and retired. Maybe that means I'm 90 on a rocker somewhere. Like whatever the end to you means, and envision yourself there, and then ask, what did you do to be there at the end?
Yeah.
Right? Why is that the end for you? Why are you happy there?
Yeah.
And what did you do to get there? And start to work backwards. Mm. I think that that's something that helped me. And going through those types of exercises to understand what drives you, motivates you, makes you happy, is critical. I think the other piece too then is sort of along those same lines, like an industry survey of like, so you now know what makes you happy. It might not be that, like, it might not be that the aerospace industry makes you happy.
Yeah.
Right. But maybe flying a plane makes you happier than anything you can imagine. And now that you've figured that out, what industries out there can help you get closer to flying a plane?
Yeah.
And maybe it's aerospace.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something else.
Oh, I love that. And then last one is just, what did you not know that you didn't know when you were in the military? Like, what has been the most surprising, either in personal life or professional life, that you didn't really know about when you were on active duty?
Did I not know that I didn't know?
Or what's just been most surprising in that transition?
I think... I think for me, the biggest thing, and I've talked about it a couple times already, is this idea of self-doubt. And what I didn't know, that I didn't know, is how prepared and equipped military or veterans are as they're transitioning for an unbelievable number of roles within corporate America. And I think that, you know, had I known that, my path likely would have been different. Or had I believed it, my path would have been different. Now, I think that there's still difficulty in convincing companies that that is true. And it's something that I have worked to do here at Airbnb. But I firmly believe that transitioning military members are unbelievably qualified and capable to do a wide variety of roles, to take on a wide variety of roles in companies. And providing a way to really internalize that or get folks to believe it is critical, because having now been on the inside, I know that I could have done my job today 2 years before without business school.
Man, that's very true for my experience, too, where I think I just had this chip on my shoulder feeling like everyone knew more about what to do than I did, which is funny because coming from the military where you are so bolstered and so confident, and then in that transition lost a lot of that. And I think in raising money and in leading like the first couple employees I hired, I was always so doubtful of my own intuition. And in retrospect, my gut feel was almost always right. And I credit most of that to the experience in the military rather than to business school, of just that ability to get shit done and that ability to deliver and the discipline and the framework for thinking. So I also struggled with that. A lot of that self-doubt and just kind of second-guessing myself or assuming that I didn't know what I actually did know.
Absolutely. And the mindset that you don't have to know the answers to everything, and it's actually something that I think military folks are really good at. If you don't know the answer, you'll find the person who does. And as you talk to people in corporate America, they sound daunting because they tend to sound well-spoken in their vertical. But it turns out that it's not about necessarily knowing everything. It's about knowing when you need to bring somebody else into the conversation. And military folks are great at that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. This has been great.
Surface. All right. That's all for today. We'll be back next week bringing you different stories with veterans and how they've managed their career transition, advice they'd give to active duty personnel who want to follow in their footsteps or are considering the industry, functional role, or lifestyle they've chosen. If you have any questions or comments, if you have topics you'd like covered or people you'd like interviewed, please contact me at beyondtheuniform.io, and have a great week.